This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, I'm Davina from Devon. I've been sober curious for quite a few years. Never really made it stick because, well, everybody drinks alcohol, right? Anyway, I decided to join OTI after listening to the pod and just the enthusiasm from Ben and Chaz shouting about AF life. I'm so glad I joined the community because I'm now nearly 200 days alcohol free. It's an absolute game changer for me. Everybody on the Zooms are lovely. It's just like one great big extended family and we're all just cheering everybody on. I would recommend without hesitation that you join because it is just the best thing I've ever done.
You've heard the podcast, now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to Over the Influence. It's fabulous as always to have you listening. We've got loads to talk about with today's fantastic guest. Already excited. It's transatlantic today and you know we love it. One, when it's on the other side of the world, and two, it's one of those episodes with a fabulous community member. My name is Sharon Hartley. I live in Lancashire in the northwest of England. I'm like 5.5 years alcohol free. I think last week-ish. 2,000 days, it was a mega milestone. Absolutely chuffed to bits. I think it's really important to constantly let you know that I never intended to be sober. I only ever wanted to take a break from alcohol and was fully intent on getting right back on it after my break of just 90 days. Something weird happened. Everything started to improve. I fell in love with alcohol-free life and now I love banging on, wanging on, week in, week out about all things sobriety. I'm 50 years old. I used to be a very, very regular drinker. Drank too much, too quickly, too often. That's me in a very short nutshell. Ben, how the hell are you?
Yep, good, thank you. Ben, 35, live in Liverpool. And I was talking to someone about why I removed alcohol this week. And it kind of, and I, things click, don't they, as you get further into this. And for me, you know, I didn't realise that I'd started, I've talked about this before, like, in my 20s I drank because it was fun. In my 30s I drank because I was stressed. I didn't realise actually I was doing that until I started producing Over the Influence. And if Over the Influence had never come into my life, I don't think I ever would have, that would never have clicked in my brain. Because like you, Shaz, I said, right, it's mad, absolutely mad. But I suppose I was a normal, in inverted commas, drinker because everyone else around me was doing the same thing. We're all going out and binging on a Friday night. But I gave it up for 3 months and intended to go back and then got to 3 months and went, let's do six, let's do 12. And on day 366, decided, that's it, I'm good. And, you know, it's Danny said it last week, Danny Bangers, it's progressive, it gets worse. That's how it works. It's a new quote. It's on my quote board. Can we just quickly, before we say hello to Chris, say a huge thank you to Adam, who provided us with huge amounts of entertainment this week. Because having listened to Danny Bangers' episode, we call him Danny Bangers because he invested in a sausage roll van, right? But we had an email from Adam this week. He said, hi guys, where can I find out about those walks that Danny Sausage does? And I think Danny Sausage is just the most fabulous new nickname.
It was the best subject line I've ever seen on an email to OTI. It simply said, Danny Sausage. And I'm like, I can't.
Danny Sausage.
No, Leap Ben, no more. We can't get into this now.
I know. But, you know, but the very serious point that Danny Sausage was making, you know, it's progressive, it gets worse, that's how it works. You know, for me, I feel very, very lucky that Over the Influence came into my life when it did, and I nipped my drinking in the bud. And I am now going to be 4 years alcohol-free in the summer.
That's just brilliant, isn't it? 4 years alcohol-free in the summer. It's so, so good. Right, let's crack on. Enough about Danny Sausage, enough about me and thee, Ben. We can start.
So good.
It deserves its whole own episode. Right, compose yourself. Okay, let's get back to the matter in hand. Mm-hmm. As we say, we absolutely love this podcast because it is all about the guests, the AF authors, the well-being bigwigs, the influencers, you know, amazing people, ordinary people with extraordinary stories, but nothing gives us greater pleasure than to invite community members onto the actual podcast. Chris Hoos from New York is in the OTI. Hoos, how you diddling? See what I did there? How are you, Chris?
That was really good. Very good. I'm very good. How are you doing?
Very, very well. Thank you so much for doing this. Now, if you're thinking, I recognise that voice, that American twang, it's familiar. Well, if we very quickly rewind to like, I think, oh, when was it? Was it October time, Chris, when you were last?
I was going to say after Thanksgiving, but that's not going to mean anything to you.
So November?
End of November, yeah.
So it was November time.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Liv has shouted to me, it's going to mean nothing to us.
It's because I know Chris so well. Very good friends with our transatlantic members, honestly. And so Chris spent some time over here, which we'll talk about further on in this episode, why on earth you spend so much time in the UK, given that you live in New York, because it's absolutely brilliant. But we caught up with yourself and your fabulous friend, Aaron, who's also a community member. And that was just a couple of months ago. But we thought, you know what, we need to talk to Chris all on his own, delve a little bit deeper into your life, Chris, into what life was like for you as a drinker. Obviously, singing about glorious sobriety because you're now two and a half years in. So before we get into all that, just sort of set the scene as to who you are and where you are in the world and what you do, if that's all right.
Sure. I was going to say we were having a really nice chat at the end of November before Aaron kind of rudely interrupted.
He did. But he was late, wasn't he? He came blustering through. We're like, oh, here he is.
Anyway, I'm Chris. I'm 35. I live in New York, nowhere near New York City. It's amazing. I was listening to Ben talk, and I feel, obviously, we're on two completely different sides of the world, but I feel like there's a lot of parallels just with our generation and all that. But yeah, I work from home. I've worked from home for the last few years. The area of New York I live in now, so I lived in, this is the area I grew up in. I used to live in Colorado, so I lived in Denver, moved there after university, lived there for about 10 years with my partner at the time, and then moved home probably like 3 or 4 years ago, maybe more, I don't even know. It's all blur post-pandemic, but it's going to be hard to explain because there's no UK equivalent, but I work in pensions. So I'm a relationship manager, so I have, we call them a 401k over here, but it's basically pensions or similar, but
we get a good idea of who you are and where you are now. So I think I mentioned in the introduction, we got distracted with the whole Danny Sausage thing. And I know, Chris, you'll understand where we're talking about this because he's also a friend of yours because he's from the community. I think I mentioned that you are 2.5 years alcohol free now, which absolutely big up your bad self because that is fantastic. So going off my really poor sums or math, as you would say in the States, you were what, 32-ish when you started this, which, you know, at the risk of sounding like your weird Auntie Shaz, Chris, very, very strange image that. I think that is amazing. And to be doing that so young, you know, we talk about repetition a lot. It's what I say a lot. You've saved yourself decades and decades of absolute pain and probably a whole different shitstorm. Why did you want to stop drinking? Talk us through that.
Sorry, I'm just trying to get Danny's sausages out of my head.
Yeah, we need to move on fast.
Similar to what Ben said, I think my drinking had got a little, I was probably a little bit further down the, I love the image. I can't remember if it was Annie Grace or I just read an Alan Carr book on nicotine because I just quit nicotine last week. But he talks about like that pitcher plant. I think Annie Grace uses that in her book. It's almost like a Venus flytrap plant that has like the, and basically the theory is any addictive substance you're using, you're kind of the fly on the edge of the pitcher plant and you're kind of slowly descending. My theory, I think I agree with that. I think anybody who's drinking or using an addictive substance, I think you're kind of at varying levels on that. So like Ben said, you look around and everybody's kind of doing the same thing and you're able to look down in the plant and say, well, I'm not stuck. I'm not trapped yet. So I'm okay. I think I was probably a little bit further down the slope to what Ben had just explained kind of where he was at in the intro, but I think I could see that it was only going one way and very similar to what Ben said. I think I originally drank, it was all fun and games, you know, through, you know, your late teens, 20s, and then the 30s, it was like, okay, I'm doing this to kind of cope with things and deal with the stress. And again, I could kind of just see where I was at and where things were headed, and just decided that I needed to try and make a change.
It's an interesting one, that, isn't it? Because you talked about the environment that we grew up in. Yes, on different sides of the Atlantic, but we're both the same age, both the same kind of cultural references in many ways. It's funny, isn't it? Because we've both spotted that actually drinking on stress, coming home and going, bloody hell, I had a hard day today, get me a drink, isn't a good thing. You know, that's potentially a slippery slope. But what does society tell you? You've had a tough day, have a drink. You know, think about terrible funerals. Someone said, this to me as an example, oh, you need to have a drink. No, I don't. Who was it that said to us, Shaz? I can't remember if it was on an episode or on a Zoom call where someone was, they had their car stolen or something. The police went, oh, you need to go and get a drink. No, I don't. You know, the last thing I need right now is to go and get.
I remember that.
You get these kind of authority figures saying, go on, the way to solve the bad feeling that you currently have is to drink. Do you know what I mean? It's not like we've spotted it. And I think, you know, very self-aware. We're very self-aware, handsome men, Chris. but more similarities. But, you know, but it's tricky to do that, isn't it? It is tricky to do that when society's telling you the opposite in every way all the time.
I think, too, I was thinking about this the other day. I think you take for granted, like, subconsciously how you look around. And I think if you're surrounded by it, and like you said, your friends and everybody's doing the same thing, you kind of, it's almost a way of justifying it in your head subconsciously. And oddly, I started thinking about that when I stopped drinking. I was almost like replacing drinking with another random bad habit. And I was like, wait a second. I was like, what if everybody just so happened to meet up and like blow lines of cocaine or something, like in an establishment, like how bizarre that would be. But the fact that everybody's doing it, it almost makes it seem okay. Even if you're like, well, I feel like shit and I'm spending a ton of money and I'm clearly doing a ton of damage to my health. But it's kind of like that misery loves company, and like seeing everybody around you doing the same thing, I think you're less aware of the descent, you know, the descent into the pitcher plant. And again, you can always point to, that's why I love what Danny said last week about, like, I struggle with how helpful it is to share how bad things got, because I know when I was in that state of mind and when I was drinking like that, like, and I don't even think you're aware you're doing it. It's like a subconscious thing. Like, you grab at examples of somebody who's worse than you. Like, you see, it's like a safety, like, buffer in your head of like, well, I'm not like that, so like, it's okay. But yeah, I just think, I think, like you said, I think it's everywhere in society, it's encouraged. Everybody's doing it. Your drinking doesn't look dissimilar to everybody around you, at least for me. I mean, hanging out with, I'm sure it's the same as your, you know, your friends and that generation, that age group, like, everybody's getting fucked up. Everybody's drinking a lot. And that can really just normalize the behavior in your head, I think.
I totally agree. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's that, as Ben said in his intro, Chris, and he used inverted commas, I was just a normal drinker. I thought I was a normal drinker. And the absolute bull that you will feed yourself in order to validate your drinking, even though there's this thing, Chris, isn't there, in the back of your mind going, hang on a minute, you know, if I rewind 12 months, 2 years, 3 years, I wasn't drinking at this speed. I wasn't drinking this volume. But actually, it's okay. It's all right, because everybody else is doing it. At what point, Chris, did you reach when you went, actually, no, I'm going to make a change? Was it gradual? Did it happen overnight? Talk us through that.
I think it's so hard to say in hindsight. I think, and it probably happened over the course of several years, and it's just hard to, it's hard to think back and remember when it started. I'm sure that years before I stopped, I'm sure that I had that voice, and you hear people talk about that voice in your head that you really have to trust. I think I always had something, especially when I was starting, you know, when I moved to Colorado, and I'd say like the drinking kind of ramped up, but again, nothing outrageous or nothing like crazy compared to like what my peers were doing. But I think I always had that voice in the back of my head of like, this is clearly, you know, whether it was going to work hungover, or I said I was with a long-term partner at the time for like 10 years, and our relationship was clearly being affected, and I just think your brain has an amazing way of justifying things when you're in the midst of it, and like, well, my relationship is not doing well because of this, this, and this, so I'm drinking because of that. The drinking isn't contributing to that. No way.
Yeah,
I can't be
absolutely.
part of it. Or like, my job is stressful, and so I'm drinking, and not, well, wait a second. Maybe if I didn't go out on a Wednesday and get completely fucked up and wake up at 6 in the morning and come into work, like,
Yeah.
maybe my job would be a little bit easier
But
to
you
handle.
don't see any of this, and you don't know any of that. And you know, in terms of hindsight and that 2020 vision, only when you're on the other side of it, or at least you begin your AF journey, you can look back and go, oh wow, this is where I was at.
Yeah, I mean, that's why it's a tricky thing, because I am a firm believer that it's like being in like the eye of a hurricane or something. Like, you really, even if it's your drinking is not like that chaotic or bad, like, you have to separate yourself from it for a period of time, before you can kind of have a clear picture of what's actually going on.
I wanted to talk more about why you made the decision to stop. And when we began chatting, that you talked about the drinking ramping up to cope with things. Chris, do you mind if we talk about your family and your sister? Is that okay?
Yeah, sure.
Could you tell us a bit about your sister and the impact that alcohol and substances had on her, and maybe as a result, had on you?
Yeah, I know we were chatting about that the other day. Yeah, so I guess to put it in a timeline. So again, my drink, I think I was always, again, not super dissimilar from my peers, drank through my, certainly had things I regret and stuff like that. But I think, again, quote unquote, normal drinking. And this is when I was out in Colorado. So, well, I guess to backtrack. So my growing up, there was definitely I mean, I think substance abuse in my family is definitely a thing. I don't think, again, super dissimilar from, I think, unfortunately, it impacts lots of families. But my parents didn't really drink too much, at least when I was growing up. But my father's sister was like a kind of the quote unquote stereotypical alcoholic growing up. So, and I had cousins that were my age where I remember being very, very young before I really understood what it was. But I remember, like, she would, again, stereotypical alcoholic, she would pass out. And then my cousins would have to call my dad, and my dad would have to pick him up and kind of bring him over to my house and stuff like that. And she was like that throughout her whole life, unfortunately, and never kicked it. And she ended up passing away from, I think it was throat cancer from drinking. But again, so I kind of had that in my brain growing up of like, okay, this is what problematic drinking looks like. And then the other example was my older sister. So my older sister, Lindsay, she was 8 years older than me. So there's a quite an age gap. But again, I mean, my whole life growing up and into my adult life, I just remember her being, I don't know why, like, learning about Amy Winehouse, I'm like, oh my God, she reminds me so much of my sister. Just like, she was hilarious. I mean, she was like really, really funny, the life of the party type, but absolutely just, lots of mental health issues, lots of substance abuse issues other than just drinking. But drinking was definitely always at the core of it for sure. I mean, that's definitely what always kind of sparked everything. And she consistently, like, drank a ton. But again, that her and my aunt kind of being, and I think goes the same for everybody in my family, like my brother and cousins who I'd hang out with. It's like, well, at least we're not like that. And again, it's not something you say out loud, but I think subconsciously that is the bar. It's like, well, I'm not, my life isn't falling apart. Like, I'm able to hold down a job and all this stuff, and I'm not like Lindsay, or I'm not like my aunt and all that. So anyway, I mean, and that's, again, in this fucked up way, that's how me and my sister, I mean, we were always very close. I think we had a special bond, but when we were adults, that's kind of how we bonded, was getting really fucked up and doing all sorts of stuff. And so anyway, but so I was in Denver at the time, and again, this was not, she had several rock bottoms and a lot of scares, mental health scares of, thinking something might have happened. And so this was not, unfortunately, not completely out of the blue and not like a complete shock, but I was in Colorado, and actually I think I had like 5 or 6 friends visiting me at the time, so it was like terrible timing. And we were at a bar in like the middle of the day, and I remember my brother called me and was like, I got some really bad news, and then told me that our sister had passed away and Ted took her own life. So literally at the bar drunk, how fitting for this podcast. But yeah, it was just this, again, it was not completely out of the blue, but it was obviously a major shock. So I think that's when, and she had called, I mean, that was kind of the worst thing. She had burned so many bridges and had called, you know, she was calling everybody in the family to see if they would help. And I'm like across the country in Colorado. And it was just to the point where it's like just absolute rock bottom. So it was tough. But I think, again, kind of in hindsight, I had just, it was a lot of things kind of culminating at once. So my drinking was already, I was already a pretty heavy drinker and going out and stuff like that. And then I think, again, in hindsight, when my sister passed away, me and my partner at the time had just decided to split up. And it was like all of these things happened in quick succession. But I think when my sister passed away, and again, I didn't do it at the time, but I think it was, I was clearly like ramped my drinking way up. I had just gotten this huge promotion at work that I felt like imposter syndrome from, and I was like not able to handle. I ended up taking like a leave of absence and unfortunately used that to just kind of party. And it's just very obvious that I was at that point really using drinking as a way to get through it.
Thank you for talking about it. It's important that you do. I suppose, did you consciously ramp up your drinking in that period? If, you know, a series of events all happening, you know, within a short space of time, was it a conscious kind of fuck life, you know, I'm going to consciously, I deserve this? Or is it just like so many people talk about, just that just ramps up and unconsciously almost?
Yeah, I think it was completely, I've never been like a masochistic person like that where I'm like, fuck it, I'm going to fuck everything up. But I think that's what I was. I mean, I remember I was really, really trying to hold on. And I felt a lot of guilt and shame about, again, like that. I just gotten this amazing promotion that I felt like I really had to do a good job with. And I was like friends with the people I worked with. So it was just this like, I was really, really trying to hold on and trying to make it work. But it was just clearly like, obviously there's this emotional unresolved stuff that's mounting inside. And I'm clearly like, it's not a coincidence that my drinking is getting way worse. And again, like if you were to ask me when I was in the midst of it, I'd be like, oh no, I'm just again, it's such an insidious thing. Cause I think it still felt kind of normal to me at that point. I was just like looking for more opportunities to go out. I was like looking for, I was able to justify to myself, like, oh, I can drink during the week because I can work from home. It was just like this, again, it's this kind of insidious subconscious just ramping up. And again, it wasn't just my sister passing away. It was kind of this lots of life changes happening in very quick succession, like breaking up, splitting up with my, living on my own for the first time in, you know, 10 years and ending a really long relationship. And luckily, I mean, we remained really good friends even through that. And I'm very grateful to her for all of that. Cause I had, that was the other tricky thing was just being out, just to give Shaz some geographical perspective.
You know, I'm rubbish at geography, Chris.
That's probably like,
just to give context to this, before we started recording, Shaz is like, well, you don't live too far. New York State or New York City. So could you see Empire State Building?
Don't tell everybody.
And Chris is like, no, I'm 6 hours away. 6 hours away from Empire State.
You see it from your apartment window.
But you said you lived in New York. So yes, please give some geographical perspective, Chris.
So Colorado is, it's in the Rocky Mountains. So it's in the middle of the country. So it's probably about it's like a 26-hour drive from here.
Oh, wow.
So anyway, so we my partner at the time, so she's from here. We had moved out there, so we were really kind of, I had friends out there, but we were really each other's support system. And then my other sister's fiance passed away really suddenly after that, like a couple months later. So it was just this kind of shit storm in a really quick period. And that's basically after that, I was like, which again, all too common, I think, as with a lot of people, but especially people who drink, it's like, okay, well, things are a real mess. And again, at the time, not really crediting enough of that to the massive amounts of alcohol I'm pouring down my throat. But at that point, I was like, okay, you know what? Things aren't really working here. I need to move back to New York, not New York City.
All right, Chris, thanks. Noted.
But basically at that point, I was like, you know what? Like, things have become unmanageable. So moving back to New York is going to fix everything. And again, I think that's a common thought process as well. Let me just change my environment, but not actually anything else I'm doing or this toxic.
Yeah. Just transfer all my problems with it.
Exactly. So it worked for, I mean, I definitely was needed because I went home. But again, it was better for a period, I think, being home and having more friends and family around and having the support. But inevitably, again, I think it's only going one way, and it eventually caught up with me. And then, which I think I mentioned on the last episode I was on with Aaron, but I think then lockdown happening and all of that, I think that really, again, kind of ramped things up again.
So, you know, over a number of years, progressively, you're drinking more. But one day, you went, right, day one of new sober me. Why? Like, did you just wake up one day? Was it kind of something you thought about for a long time? Did you plan it? Did you say, on Monday, the X of X, I will be a non-drinker? How did it work?
No, I think it was more, I think Danny was saying it last week. I think in my head I had the classic, like, I just need to reset. Like, I'm always seem to be drinking more than, you know, these limits that I'm giving myself. I just need to do a reset. So I'm pretty sure that's how it went. I think I took a month off and did like my first dry month. I think it was like not even a special catchy month like dry January. I think it was like a dry like June or something. It was just like a random month. I was like, right, I'm doing 30 days, like enough's enough.
So a sober summer.
Sober then, summer.
You'd say. I mean, there's always a catchy phrase we can come up with, Chris. It doesn't matter.
Always gets a name in there.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. You know, if you listen to this podcast and when it comes out in early March, maybe you fancy a sober spring.
I'll get you. And, yeah. And why wait, yeah. Ben?
You
why
don't have to
wait?
Wait to sober October.
That's right.
Finish the sentence.
Why wait to feel great? Oh,
you sound like a car salesperson.
I've said that one for a while.
sorry, Chris, we digress. We digress.
Sorry, Chris. Again.
Go on.
So yeah, I think that's, I'm pretty sure that's what happened. I think I took a month to reset, quote unquote reset, and then surprise, surprise, it's like, okay. I always think of that quote. I think it's a Robin Williams quote where he says, with alcohol, you break your own standards quicker than you can lower them or something like that.
Wow.
Again, it's like these, I keep going into it being like, okay, surely you can, just, you know, you're sitting there frustrated with yourself. And I'm like, okay, the night was good, 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 good. Like, why can't you just stop it right here? And like that frustration of like, why can I not? Which again, I think going back to what we talked about before, I think that is like normalized. It's almost funny. Like, you talk about with your friends, it's like, it's become like a meme of like, oh, I'm just going to go out for one or two. And then it's like 2 a.m. Ha 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 ha. And it's like that happening over and over and over again. And just the frustration of that mounting, and then finally being like, okay, I just need to reset. That obviously didn't work. And then my next thing was like, okay, I'm going to get into therapy, because, which again, I've talked to people who have had the same thought process, which is like, clearly my drinking is this bad because I have these underlying my sister passed away, like all this stuff that I haven't really dealt with. So that must be why the drinking is bad. Like that must be why I'm drinking more than I want to be drinking. So if I can attack that and like that anxiety that I'm dealing with, that's going to make the drinking better, which of course, like you're smiling because it's a fucking ridiculous thing. I mean, again, when you're in it, it seems logical because obviously a lot of, but in hindsight, it's like, okay, but maybe the anxiety is from the anxiety inducing thing that you're putting in your body every week. But the therapy was a huge, it ended up being a massive part of why I was able to stick with it. And again, my therapist is never, I just talked to him today, literally. I see him like once a month, but he never once was like, you need to stop drinking or tell him what to do. But having that person there, that accountability to be like, and hearing yourself say it out loud over and over is, that was like huge for me, the accountability of like, and you know, some sort of event coming up and talk to my therapist, be like, here's my strategy. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to make sure I eat a lot of food. I'm going to stick to beer. I'm going to do this. And then having to talk to him the next week and be like, this is how it went. And again, he's never saying you need to stop, but it's just that carried on for a while. And then, yeah, I think, sorry, this is really long winded. I apologize.
It's a long form podcast. It's fine by us.
I think what happened, so again, I was probably in therapy for a year and at that point I'd done like a couple dry months. And then I think it was October, whenever that was, that I stopped. But I was like, okay, I think the month before September, I was like, I'm going to do a dry month, but I have like a wedding in October. I got all these things to do. So I went right back into it in October and it was an absolute shit show. I mean, it was, again, surprise, surprise, right back to where you started. And then after that, I was like, okay, right, I'm going to do 100 days. Like, obviously a month isn't enough to reset. And OTI was a massive part of that, because I think hearing Shaz and everybody talk about that 100 days being the sweet spot and committing to that was, and again, I might've mentioned that when I was on the podcast before, but I think that was also key for me, was like, I got to a point where it's like, I have to believe that these people aren't lying. And also I just kind of accepted the fact that I'm never going to feel fully comfortable. Like I'm never going to feel 100% ready to do this. And I just have to dive in and do it, basically.
I think you speak for so many people there, myself, Ben, you know, we're just like, right, we're just going to try this thing, just see where it leads. I'm really conscious that this could probably be a 2-hour episode and we've not got another hour and a quarter left because the community is so, so busy. We have Zoom calls coming out of our ears, left, right and centre. So we'll get kicked off this call if we don't get to the other stuff that I want to talk about as well. And I know Ben's really keen to talk about this, Chris. Why the hell did you join Over the Influence? You're based in New York. You know, it's run by these two northern monkeys.
Yeah, it's not the best sell there,
I'm
Chaz.
Not selling
Why
names.
The hell?
Why the hell?
Yeah.
Because what started off as, you know, this chat called Chris, who thought, oh, I'm going to sign up to this online community. I'm see what it's about. Oh, my God. Fast forward to where we are now. I've never known anybody book as many flipping trips. I've never been up as many mountains with American. It's amazing. There's so much to talk about. But why the hell did you decide to join OTI when you did? And then after that, we want to know what it means to you and the difference it's made.
Yeah, well, I think the answers are related, but I had listened obviously for a long time. I think it's the same kind of story a lot of people say, which is just the positivity and it's such a different, which I think is the most effective way of looking at it. Cause it really is, it's not this thing you're depriving yourself of. And like this, you know, it's all of this amazing positives that you're going to gain. So I think the positivity was why I kept listening. And then I mean, I didn't join until I was probably a year in, I think.
Exactly. This is my point. Why?
I think it was honestly mostly, I think part of it was because I was coming up on my year and I was like, I don't think anybody else in my life is really going to be that enthusiastic that I'm a year alcohol free. So I think that was part of it. And then part of it too was like the decision to go to Ben Nevis, because I remember I kept hearing to do it and I was just like, fuck it. Like, I've never been to the UK. I love to travel. I'm going to go to Ben Nevis. So I think that was part of it. And then part of it, like I think I mentioned on the last episode, like I truly joined initially just to say hi to you and just to say thank you. That was the only reason I signed up. Like, I fully anticipated at that point, like in the beginning, like, I'm just going to pay for my month, hop on a Zoom with Shaz, say hi. And I remember I sent you a message. And then I was like thinking that that would be it. And then I just kind of got sucked in.
Sorry about that. Soz. You thought it'd be crap and you'd bog off. And here you still are.
Never been to the UK. And now he's getting, you know, gifts sent through from the CEO of United Airlines. Hey, Chris, I haven't seen you for a week. When are you coming back to book you? Because how many times have you been over now, Chris? Well, is it four?
So, yeah, so I went more? I was going to say, so last year I came over four times. And wow. Then I'm leaving next Wednesday. So I'm going to be coming over next week.
Of course.
So I'm going to be there for all of March. So I'm going to be there for a month. And then I'm coming first.
So we'll see you on Scarfell.
I think it was Maz I was talking to, and it sounds absurd when you say it out loud, because she's like, okay, so you're coming for March. I was like, yeah, I'm going to be in March, and then I'll be home for April, and then I'm coming in May, and then I'll be home for
oh, just be done with it. Just come over. We've got a little spare room. I can put you up in one of the bunks.
I was going to say, there's anybody listening who's in on the UK visa office who knows how to get me a work visa or something like that, that would be great.
Oh my God. Yes.
So then I'm back in July home, and then I'm back in September.
So you are literally coming. So you're doing England's highest mountain. We're doing in just a couple of weeks' time. You're coming back to Ben Nevis for some godforsaken reason, because you're on the last one. And I mean, that was a trek and a half. You're coming to Snowdon as well. Are you doing the Yorkshire Three Peaks? You're doing everything, aren't you? That's every single event we've got this year, Ben, that this man, he's flying over from the Empire State Buildings. He lives just next door to England.
Yeah, it does. It's amazing. And you know what, Chris? It's like, obviously it fills us with joy. And I do remember the first time that Shaz messaged me, be like, oh my God, we've got a member in New York. Like it does whenever anyone joins us from, you know, like not just down the road from
Lancashire.
Us. I love it when everyone joins. Yeah, but it's just nuts, isn't it? It's just, you know, the power of the podcast.
Yeah.
But anyway, but it's what you were saying about that kind of that group exoneration, almost the fact that, you know, memes get posted around of, oh, I only came out for one and end up, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning. Like, how many times have we done that? Oh yeah, blacked out last night. Can't remember anything after midnight. Ha ha ha. Oh, I didn't get into work today. I was, you know, I thought, oh, I'm already 4 hours late. Might as well not go. Ah ha ha ha. You know, it's that kind of the group think, isn't it? Of, oh, if we're all doing it, then it's all right. I suppose what you're getting now is the opposite, and it's a very, you know, it's a very ancient thing, isn't it? We want to be part of the crowd. We want to be protected, safety in numbers. And I suppose, you know, what you've done is that now, unfortunately, it involves a few flights here and there, but the group that you're involved with aren't laughing at the fact that they went out for one and then they didn't make it into work and they can't remember. The group that you're involved with now are talking about how great, you know, it is to walk up a mountain in Scotland and, you know, live life to the full and have energy and enthusiasm. And you know, is that part of it? Is it to be
surrounded? Yeah, that's exactly what it is. That was a major reason for joining OTI for sure. And I think that's why I stuck with it, because I think even being a year in, it is just a lot. Like I said, it could be, you could replace drinking with any other bad habit. And of course, like you said, it's a tribal thing in our DNA. It's like, we want to be, if you're not doing something that everybody else is doing, even if that thing is extremely harmful and addictive and toxic, you're going to feel left out, and it's going to feel awkward, and it's going to make you second guess your decision to do it. So that is a major reason why OTI is such a powerful thing. And it's completely bizarre. Like, I take it for granted. I think I mentioned it last time, but I literally talked to probably 5 or 6 or 7, I don't even know, like OTI people every day, and have like really amazing friendships with, like exchanging voice notes. And again, you just, I become so used to it now. Like, I'm I catch myself saying something like, oh, I'm coming to the UK for a month, or I'm coming every other month for the whole year or something. And it's like, oh, and I'm meeting up with this person. And like, in March, so my first weekend there, I'm going on a secret hike club I can't talk about. And I'm.
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
But it's just sick like, of hearing about this secret hike club. And like, I take for granted, like, the fact that I'm emailing with Shaz's mom pictures.
Right. I'm going to pick you up on this now. Right. So this is sobriety in a nutshell, right? So we talk about how bonkers things get when you remove alcohol. It was crackers enough, I think, that Chris went, you know what, I'll get in touch with these guys at Over the Influence a year in. Fantastic. Made some amazing connections. He's been over like a million times. One of the weirdest moments for me was when I think my mum got in touch and said, oh, Shaz, that lovely friend of yours in States, I think he's called Chris, he's after me mince pie recipe. And I'm like, right, pardon. Next thing I know, Chris and my mum, Celia, are emailing. It's my grandma's recipe that fucking even I've not got because it's like special. Oh, no, he's lovely, isn't he? Lovely, isn't he, that young man? I'm going to send him recipe for my mince pies. I'm like, pick up yourself, Celia. And I'm like, and that is the power of connection.
I was literally like, I was going to ask you, I should just have her number at this point because I was like,
yeah, just WhatsApp her.
I was in my kitchen, swearing, covered in like flour and sugar. And I'm like, I'm not doing these right. I got to talk to Celia. But I was so, it came out pretty good, but I literally was like sending pictures of like a cross section of the pie. I was like, how does this look? And she's like, maybe do them a little bit longer next time. So she was like giving me tips and everything, but
it's ridiculous. You should just be, yeah, just WhatsApp her. She'll sort you out. She does a cracking simnel cake, which I think you had last time you were here.
Thanks.
The Easter cake. So we'll sort some more baking out, Chris, for when you're over for the month of March, May, April, May, June, whatever it is. Ben, can you believe it? It's just ridiculous.
No, I can't believe it. And you know what? I was just thinking then, if you've got any community members who are like, oh, you know what? I do quite fancy going on. And you've looked at the AA route plan and you've gone, oh, it's like a 4-hour drive. Like, oh, do I? Don't. Just think, Chris is coming over from the Empire State Building to the UK.
On a natural aeroplane.
Like, get in your car.
Get in your car. Just get
on. Get in your car. Get on a train, whatever. Someone will pick you up from the station. Come on, get booked, get with us. But it's fabulous, Chris, and I can't wait to see you so much this year. Like, it's really lovely to be able to say that.
I can't wait.
Chris, it's been a pleasure. It really has. Not just this episode. The whole, journey of you joining Over the Influence, becoming friends with myself and Ben. I think the absolute world of you. I think it's brilliant, and it's just so wonderful that we've now got an amazing friendship through what was, well, just it was just going to be a Zoom call. Chris Hoos from actual New York, not overlooking the Empire State Building, but that image, I'm gonna roll with it anyway because I like it. Chris, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us on Over the Influence.
You're welcome. See you soon.